Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, now inside the 12th hour. And Liberty Hill, Texas today is June 26, 2014, or it is Sibian 29, 2018. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, "In a Little While We're Going Home." Let us sing a song that will cheer us by the way. In a little while we're going home. For the night will end in the everlasting day. In a little while we're going home. In a little while, in a little while, we shall cross the billows foam. We shall meet at last when the stormy winds are past. In a little while we're going home. We'll do the work that our hands may find to do. In a little while we're going home. And the grace of Yah will our daily strength renew. In a little while we're going home. In a little while, in a little while, we shall cross the billows foam. We shall meet at last when the stormy winds have passed. In a little while we're going home. We will smooth the path for some weary, wayworn feet. In a little while we're going home. And a loving heart spread around an infant sweet. In a little while we're going home. In a little while, in a little while, we shall cross the billows foam. We shall meet at last when the stormy winds have passed. And a little while we're going home. There's a rest beyond this sweet leaf from every care. In a little while we're going home. And no tears shall fall in the city that I'd enter. In a little while we're going home. In a little while, in a little while, we shall cross the billows home. We shall meet at last when the stormy winds are past. In a little while we're going home. Build the cities, comfort Zion, choose Jerusalem. Time of Greetings, Volume 1, Number 11, by the V.T. Hardoff, October 19, 1946, when this message was preached. Okay, we're going to first refer to a prayer thought taken from Isaiah 14. For the Yahweh will have mercy on Jacob and will yet choose Israel, the 12 tribes. Jacob is going to have mercy on the whole 12 tribes, starting with Judah first, and set them in their own land, and the strangers shall be joined with them, and they shall cleave unto the house of Jacob. And the people shall take them and bring them to their place, and the house of Israel shall possess them in the land of the Yahweh for the servants and handmaids, and they shall take them captives, whose captives they were, and they shall rule over their oppressors. Okay. And it shall come to pass in the day that the Yahshua, the Yahweh, shall give of thee rest from thy sorrow and from thy fear and from the hard bondage wherein thou wast made to serve, that thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of the Babylon and say, how hath the oppressor ceased, the golden city ceased? The Yahshua hath broken the staff of the wicked and the scepters of the ruler. Okay, it says Isaiah 14:6. He who smote the people in the wrath with a continual stroke, he that ruled the nations in anger, is persecuted and none hindereth. For the whole earth is at rest, and is quiet. They break forth into singing. So when they round Obama up one day, and they start persecuting him, they say that persecutes him is talking about his army as well, all of his people, that are spread out all over all the earth, and that they're wanting to persecute and kill everybody, cut everybody's heads off, including their own brothers, and they just want to take over all the nations of the world. They're in total anarchy and rebellion. But the Yeshua says, he who smote the people in the wrath of the continual stroke, he that ruled the nation in anger is persecuted and none hindered. For the whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth into singing. Yea, the fir trees rejoice at thee and the cedars of Lebanon, saying, since thou art laid down, no fellows come up against us. Hell from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirreth up the dead for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. It hath raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. All they shall speak and say unto thee, art thou also become weak as we? Art thou become like unto us? Thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy vials. The worm is spread under thee, and the worms cover thee. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, or Barack Obama? That's the same, means the same thing in Hebrew. Barack Obama means the same thing as Lucifer or Satan in Hebrew. Son of the morning, how art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? Well, Obama has weakened the nations. Okay, all the big monies of the Arab world that set Obama up is weakening the nations, bringing them down, and seemingly all the Muslims of the whole wide world are getting all the money put together, stealing it out of all the nations' treasuries. Okay, for thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into the heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of Elohim. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the height of the clouds. I will be like the Most High, yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, unto the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall nearly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake Canaan? Now, speaking more directly in the present tense, that we're speaking right directly to the President of the United States, you can insert the word Obama in here because this is who this is speaking to at this time. Verse 17. That made the world as a wilderness and destroyed the cities thereof, that opened not the house of his prisoners. Okay. All the nations that was following him and lending their power to this beast for 1 hour, he was putting them into his prison and he wouldn't open up the prison to let them out. So one day they rebelled against him. Revelation 17 shows where they rebelled against him and turned on this woman and eat her flesh and burn her with fire because of this. Isaiah 14:18. All the kings of the nations, even all of them, lie in glory, every one in his own house. But thou art cast out of thy grave like an abominable branch, and there is a raiment of those that are slain, thrust through with a sword that go down to the stones of the pit, as a carcass trodden under feet. This is what's going to happen to Obama, and all of the world has wondered after this beast. This is what's going to happen to them all. Thou shalt not be joined with them in the burial, because thou hast destroyed thy land and slain thy people. The seed of the evildoers shall never be renowned. Prepare slaughter for his children, for the iniquity of their fathers, that they do not rise nor possess the land nor fill the face of the world with the city. For I will raise up against them, saith Yahshua the host, and cut off from the Babylon the name and remnant and son and nephew, saith Yahshua. I'll also make it a possession for the bitter and pools of the water, and I will sweep it with the besom of the destruction, saith Yahshua of the host. For the Yahshua of the host hath sworn, saying, surely, as I have thought, so shall it come to pass, and as I have purposed, so shall it stand, that I will break the Assyrian in my land, and upon my mountains tread him underfoot. Then shall his yoke depart from off them, and his burden be depart from off their shoulders. This is the purpose that is purposed upon the whole earth, and this is the hand that is stretched out upon all the nations. For Yahshua the host has purpose, and who shall disannul it? And his hand is stretched out, and who shall turn it back? In the year that the king Ahaz died was his burden. Rejoice not thou, O Palestina, because the rod of him that smote thee is broken, for out of the serpent's root shall come forth a cockatrice, and his fruit shall be a far-flying serpent. And the firstborn of the poor shall feed, and the needy shall lie down in the safety. And I will kill thy root with the famine, and he shall slay thy remnant. Howl, O gate, cry, O city, thou whole Palestina, art dissolved, for there shall come from the north a smoke, and none shall be alone in his appointed times. What shall once then answer the messengers of the nation, that the Yahweh hath founded Zion, and the poor of his people shall return in it? End of our prayer thought. Let's read our prayer now for a thought for our next study, taken from the Mount of Blessing by Ellen G. White, page 161. If only 144,000 translated, which stands for you? It says, the will of Elohim is expressed in the precepts of his holy law, and the principles of this law are the principles of the heaven. But in the heaven, a service is not rendered in the spirit of the legality. When the state rebelled against the law of the Yahweh, he thought that there was a law came unto the angels, almost as an awakening to something unthought of. In the majesty or ministry, the angels are not as the servants but as the sons. There is a perfect unity between them and their creator. Obedience is unto them no drudgery. Love for the Elohim makes their service a joy. So in every soul wherein Yahshua, the hope of glory, dwells, his words are re-echoed. I delight to do thy will, O Yahweh, yea, thy laws is in my heart. For the petition, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, is a prayer that the reign of the evil on this earth may be ended, that sin may forever destroyed, and the kingdom of the righteousness be established. Then in the earth as the heaven will be fulfilled all the good pleasure of his goodness. We should now pray that the Yahshua, that the law of the Elohim be written in our hearts, that we obey the law because we want to, not because we have to, that we realize that our keeping of the Elohim's commandment is good for our own good. And above all, let us pray that our highest joy may be in the doing his will. Thus, may the Elohim's will be done on the earth as it is done in the heaven. For the builders, were first reminded that they were in the Babylon because their fathers had not obeyed the word of the Yahweh that came unto them through his prophets. that for their sins the temple and their kingdom were destroyed. For the builders were plainly told that if their project was ever to prosper, they would have to avoid the course pursued by their fathers and give special heed unto the prophets Zechariah and Haggai. For the builders promised that they would not walk in the ways of their fathers. It was in the 8th month that Zechariah delivered unto them this reformatory message. For the Jews' hearty acceptance of it prepared the way for another message. And it came within the space of 3 months. Here it is, Zechariah 1:7-8. For on the 24th day of the 11th month, which is the month Sebat, in the second year of the Darius, came the word of the Yahweh unto Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, the son of Iddo, the prophet, saying, I saw by the night, and behold, a man riding upon a red horse, and he stood among the myrtle trees that were in the bottom, and behind him were red horses speckled in white. For the interpretation of this symbolism, we shall read the prophecy in the interrogation and the angel's explanation of it in Zechariah 1:9-11. Then said I, O my Yahweh, what are these? And the angel that talked with me said unto me, I will show thee what these be. And the man that stood among the myrtle trees answered and said, these are they whom the Yahshua has sent to walk to and fro through the earth. And they answered the angel of the Yahweh that stood among the myrtle trees and said, we have walked to and fro through the earth, and behold, all the earth sitteth still and is at the rest. Since the horses are sent by the Yahshua to walk to and fro through the earth, and since they have the ability to speak, all this very obviously reveals that the horses are symbolical of the Yahshua's messengers, of those whom he sends unto the nations. The red, speckled, and white, several species of the horses depict a group of the servants of the various races and nationalities. For the horses there are four cannot be taken to symbolize either the Hebrew servants of the Zechariah's day or those of the Yahshua's day, because Yahshua's servants in those days were all of the one race, Jews are not red, speckled, and white, having fulfilled their mission. The horses reported that they have walked to and fro through the earth, and that in spite of it, the earth is sitting still, and that the rest doing nothing about it. Since it is a known fact that in the Zechariah's day, that the message bearers were all Jews, a people of the one race, and one nation, the symbolism is positively applicable unto a day in which Elohim appoints evangelists of the various races and nationalities whom he sent to and fro through the earth unto all nations. All these positive identifications clearly point out that the horses represent the first day Adventists who arose between the year of 1833 and 1844, and who then fulfilled this symbolical prophecy by the proclaiming of the second advent of Yahshua unto every Christian mission world over, but having confused the cleansing of the sanctuary, Daniel 8:14, the purification of the church, the work of the judgment harvest, by the separating of the wheat from the tares, Matthew 13:30, for the good fish from the bad, Matthew 13:47-48, the wise virgins from the foolish, Matthew 25:1-12, the sheep from the goats, Matthew 25:32, the wedding garments guest from those who had not the wedding garment, Matthew 22:2-13. For this judicial work commences first among the dead. The bookwork only of course, Daniel 7:10. Then among the living, actual bodily separation and the cleansing, Ezekiel 9. So this took place in Kermit, Texas, 2002, at Gilead Center. As the Daniel's prophecy of the chapter 8, namely the 2300 days, pointed out that the judgment work as it commenced in 1844 A.D., but as it was mistakenly understood that the world was to come to an end instead, they were greatly disappointed when the set date came and nothing happened. So it was that as the set date approached, they returned from their mission fields with the full confidence that they had finished their mission and that they had walked to and fro through the earth, and that there was time no longer, that the world was then to end. This is concerning the scope of their work. The Great Controversy, page 368, has this to say: for the writings of the Miller and his associates were carried unto the distant lands, wherever missionaries had penetrated in all the world, were sent the glad tidings of Yahshua's speedy return. Far and wide spread the message of the everlasting gospel. Fear Elohim and give glory unto him, for the hour of his judgment is come. Thus it was that the horses, messengers, thought their work was finished, but the angel who really knew the facts and saw the Elohim people still in the captivity, still away from their homeland, while the heathen were at ease, pleaded for the action. Zechariah 1:12. Then the angel of Yahweh answered and said, O Yahshua of the host, how long wilt thou not have mercy on Jerusalem and on the cities of Judah, against which thou hast had indignation these 70 years? For the prophet's Jeremiah's prediction that the Jews were to spend 70 years in the Babylonian captivity had ended, although they were still in the Babylon. But since this symbolical prophecy finds its fulfillment in our day instead of Zechariah's day, the angels plea for the mercy on the Jerusalem and on the cities of the Judah, therefore finds its direct application in this day. There is, however, this parallel. The time of the Babylonian captivity overlaps some years the time of the returning unto Jerusalem in the like manner. John's prediction that the church should return back unto the vineyard after having spent 1260 years in the wilderness in the lands of the Gentiles, Revelation 12:6, had ended and even overlapped since the year 1798, and there was no sign as yet for her returning. And as the denominations were in no condition for the accepting of the additional truth, the results are that the church is still in the wilderness concerning what the inspiration said. If the people of the Elohim had gone to work as they should have gone to work right after the Minneapolis meeting in 1888, the world could have been won in 2 years and the Yahshua would have come. See General Conference 1892. How many people believe that actually is the truth? Well, no, it's not anymore. No thinking about it. Ellen G. White had a good prophecy. It's no doubt she's telling them if they would accept John the Writer's message in 1888 that they'd be in the kingdom by 1890. Now, that's plausible. But to say that they will be in the kingdom of heaven here on earth and the holy city coming down and all that, no, that wasn't plausible. Let us go ahead now. We're on page 8. It says, for this image now positively declares that her wilderness sojourn is about to end, and that soon will she stand on the Mount Zion with the Lamb, Revelation 14:1. From this antipical point of the view, it is again seen that the angels plead for the mercy on the Jerusalem and the cities of the Judah is applicable directly unto the people in our day, and only directly unto the people in Zechariah's day. Zechariah 1:13-14. It says that, and the Yahweh answered the angel that talked with me with the good words and comfortable words. So the angel that communed with me said unto me, cry thou, saying, Thus saith Yahshua the host, I am jealous for the Jerusalem and for the Zion with a great jealousy. Rather than saying Zion shall be plowed as a field and Jerusalem shall become heaps, Micah 3:12, the Yahshua expressed his great jealousy for them and commanded his servant to cry yet and say, Zechariah 1:16-17, therefore thus saith the Yahshua, I am returned unto Jerusalem with the mercies. My house shall be built in it, saith Yahshua the host, and a line shall be stretched forth upon the Jerusalem. Cry yet, saying, thus saith Yahshua the host, my city through the prosperity shall yet be spread abroad, and Yahshua shall yet comfort Zion, and shall yet choose Jerusalem. After the disappointment in the year of 1844, the messengers of the truth in the Yahshua were told to cry yet, continue to preach, and say thus saith Yahshua the host, my city through the prosperity shall yet be spread abroad, and the Yahshua shall yet comfort Zion, and shall yet choose Jerusalem. So it was that just as soon as the sit date in 1844 passed and the people's hopes failed, Yahshua encouraged them by giving unto Sister White a vision of the end gathering of the first fruits, 144,000, the first to get to Mount Zion and there to stand with the Lamb of Revelation 14:1. The comfort of the Zion and of Jerusalem. So they started out again with a set goal to gather the 144,000 godless servants of the Elohim, those who were to be used for the ingathering of the second fruits, the innumerable multitude of all nations, Revelation 7:9. But as time went on, rather than working with the Elohim, the denomination backslid by the unbelief and the spirit of the prophecy, Testimony 5:5. Page 217, and thus lost sight of the truth that was yet to be unfolded and the which is now brought to light. So it was that as soon as the disappointment 1844 came, which is represented by the little books turning bitter after having been eaten, the angel declared, thou must prophesy again before many peoples and nations and tongues and kings, Revelation 10:10-11. For the Second Advent movement was then reorganized, and the title Seventh-day Adventism given unto it. Thus the Yahweh charged his messengers to cry yet, to proclaim again, to continue preaching the additional light, the judgment for the dead, for the cleansing of the sanctuary, Daniel 8:14. As the purification of it by the blotting out from the books, Daniel 7:10, the names of those who are found not eligible to come up in the first resurrection, the resurrection of the Holy Ones, Revelation 20:5-6. Here is seen that inspiration does not at once lighten or pass clear unto the end, but that it does so step by step, that the Elohim's truth is progressive, that we can never really say we have all the truth to carry us clear through unto the pearly gates. As to the means which are to make possible the return of the Elohim's people unto their own land, we shall read Zechariah 1:18-19. Then lifted I up mine eyes and saw and behold four horns, and I said unto the angel that talked with me, what be these? And he answered me, these are the horns which have scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem. Anciently, the kingdom of the Israel occupied the northern portion of the promised land, and the kingdom of Judah occupied the southern portion of it. For the former was scattered by the kings of the Assyria, and the latter by the king of the Babylon, those who returned unto Jerusalem. So Nebuchadnezzar was actually a king in the land of Assyria, ruling over Babylon, but it was in the land of Assyria. So it says, the former was scattered by the king of Assyria and the latter by the king of the Babylon. Those who returned into Jerusalem in the days of the Zechariah were from the kingdom of Judah, the house of David, in other words, the Jews. But as the kingdom of Israel was assimilated by the nations, it consequently left its racial and national identity. The powers that scattered both Judah and Israel are, symbolized by the four horns. Zechariah 1:20-21. And the Yahshua showed me four carpenters. Then said I, what can these to do? And he spake, saying, these are the horns which have scattered Judah, so that no man did lift up his head. But these are come to fray them, to cast out the horns of the Gentiles, which lifted up their horn over the land of the Judah to scatter it. Here the same powers which scattered Judah and Israel are again seen not as a horn, but as carpenters, not to scatter Elohim's people, but to build for them, and to cast out the horns of the powers of the Gentiles, those who rule the land. It says plainly, then, on the one hand, the nations which do not rule Palestine are to rise as the horns against those who rule it, and on the other hand, they are to rise as carpenters for the people of the Elohim. Thus will the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled, Luke 21:24. So only those who survive the judgment for the living in the house of Elohim, 1 Peter 4:17, those whose names are not blotted out from the book of Revelation 3:5, will comprise the church, among whom are to be 144,000 sons of Jacob, Revelation 7:3-8. And when Michael stands up, then those whose names are left in the book will be delivered from the trouble such as never was, Daniel 12:1. They are the remnant, as the ones who escaped alive from the judgment for the living in the house of Elohim. Thus the antitypical temple is to be built, Ezekiel chapter 40 verse 40 to 43, and the titles are the and the cities are to be spread abroad. Then these godless servants of the Elohim, as the first fruits, are to be sent unto the nations that have not heard of the Elohim's fame, or the Yahshua's fame, the non-Christian, and they shall declare his glory among the Gentiles, and shall bring all their brethren, the second fruits, all that are to be saved, unto the house of the Yahweh. So who are the second fruits? They're the Gentile brethren. That's what it says right here. Isaiah 6:16-19:20. So the purified church of the Elohim, where there shall be sin no more, and no chance taking of being hit by the plagues, Revelation 18:4. Blind unto this truth, unto the judgment for the living, the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh, for the day in which shall, which all things are to be restored, the latter sins are seen to be in the sad deception, read Testimonies Volume 3, page 253, and Testimonies Volume 5, page 217. Unless they awake to their plight, they will be found wanting and spewed out. Well, this has already happened in 2002. And you realize that the Adventist Church did restore the feast days, that because Brother Johnson represented the Adventist Church in the third step of the genuine movement, the third feeding pasture, still under the judgment of the dead as a fourth group labor. So the Adventists did restore the feast days, fulfilling the 2300 day prophecy, where they were told to restore the feast days, or to restore the sanctuary. Okay? That the 2300 days meant its fulfillment, that the Adventists now were free to restore the sanctuary. They did restore the sanctuary. Brother Johnson restored it for the Adventists. He was just a glorified third angel's message man. You see? for the Jews became blind because they closed their ears to the prophets and took no heed to what they said. For the angel of the Laodicean church today is boastingly saying, I have need neither of prophets nor of more truth, rejecting the prophets and the messages even before they come, though he well knows that the message of the judgment for the dead is not the last. The judgment for the living is the last. And isn't this strange? The theologian said, you're getting well, that the judgment of the dead message wasn't the last message. He knew that the three angels' messages belonged to that judgment of the dead, but he knew that there was a judgment of the living to come on the scene with new leaders, new servant leading it, and that they were going to have a new message. And yet, Rollis Johnson didn't see it. He thought he'd gotten this new message, and all the time he just had the end for the Adventist church and didn't realize it. For the book of Zechariah in its entirety has always been a closed book, but as its deep spiritual meaning is now unsealed and clearly brought unto the attention of the church, then those who reject it and work against it are doing even worse than the Jews, killing the prophets and the Yahweh. It is now clearly seen that the Elohim's word lives forever. Man may slay the messengers of the Elohim, but they cannot destroy his word. It is indeed like the mustard seed, though it be trodden underfoot so that it can no more be searched out than can a mustard seed after it is cast into the ground. And yet as soon as the scroll unrolls, it springs out anew. When this message began to unfold, the Laodiceans tried desperately to kill it, yet it still lives on and grows the faster. They are still trying to kill it, but since they were unable to do so when it was as small and as weak as a tiny blade of the mustard seed, how can they do it now since it has grown and borne fruit? They are therefore not to worry about the possibility of anyone's hurting the work of the Elohim. Neither are we to worry about how we are to get unto the Mount Zion, but are to make sure to be ready to board the chair of the Elohim when the angel cries out. And isn't this strange? We've already had the judgment of the living begin 11 years ago. Here we are in the place called Mount Zion at the 12th hour. So we are aware of what's going on in the prophecies, for we are fulfilling them right before the eyes of the Adventists and the Davidians and the whole world, and they know it not. All aboard, let us ever remember that those who once wrecked the ancient kingdom and cast out its people shall now come up to build it up and to cast out the nations of the Gentiles who now rule the land. And so even our enemies of yesterday, Elohim puts working for us today. Okay, we are going to continue on our study with the Time of Greetings, Volume 1, Number 12. And the subtitle is, If Only 144,000 Translated, What Chance for You? The prayer thought for that one was the opening of this taken from the Mount of Blessing, page 162. It says the first half of the prayer, Yahshua has taught us, is in the regard unto the name and kingdom and will of the Elohim, that his name may be honored, his kingdom established, his will performed. When you have thus made Elohim's service your first interest, you may ask with the confidence that your own needs may be supplied. Be not dismayed if you have not sufficient for tomorrow. You have the assurance of his promise. Thou shalt dwell in the land, and verily thou shalt be fed. Yahshua pulled nothing out of the storage, so to speak. He received day by day a fresh supply for all his needs, for himself and for his work. Yes, everything, topics for his teaching, the wine at the marriage, the bread to feed the multitude, and even the corn to pay the tax. All these he received as he had need of them. Never did he lack a thing. If we make Elohim's kingdom our chief business as he did, work for it as he worked for it, pray as he prayed, trust as he trusted, then there will be no reason for us to receive less than he. For the heaven's wealth will be at our disposal. In fact, he assures us all these things shall be added unto thee. Now what shall we pray for? We should pray that our first concern be not essentially that of the supplying ourselves with this world's goods, but rather that of the advancing of the kingdom of the Elohim. Pray that we may really realize that it is his business and good pleasure to serve our needs, and that we make it our business and delight to serve his interest. Okay, now let's end of that prayer thought. Let's now go into our main subject. The phony 144,000 translated, what chance for you? I'd like to point up, though, that he first has to be translated into the kingdom of his dear son. In Colossians 1:13, it says, who hath delivered us from the power of the darkness and has translated us into the kingdom of his dear son. Now, in 2 Samuel chapter 3, verse 10, it says, to translate the kingdom from the house of Saul and to set up the throne of the David over Israel and over Judah, from Dan even unto Beersheba. So now Israel is your 10 tribes, Judah is your 2 tribes. So now, what are we looking at here? We're looking at the 144,000 needing to be translated. What are they translated out of? They're translated out of the antitypical kingdom of Saul. Saul, remember, was the people's choice for a king. It wasn't Yahweh's, but Yahweh accepted it like he did Judas Iscariot, had Samuel to go and anoint him, and to give him an opportunity to make well, to do good. And we know what happened. Yahweh sent Samuel again to tell Saul, because you have disobeyed my command, I have rejected you from being king. So that was a temporal kingdom. It only lasted 40 years. But it wasn't eternal. Yahweh didn't make a covenant with the house of King Saul that it'd be eternal, only with David. So David's kingdom had to be translated. In 2 Samuel 3:10, it had to be translated out of King Saul. A kingdom. Okay, so now it says right there in 2 Samuel chapter 3, we'll go to the first verse, it says, now there was long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. Okay, because David's house was established during the time of King Saul's house, when it was established. Remember, David, the little shepherd boy, killed Goliath for King Saul, because King Saul didn't have the nerve now the Spirit of Yahweh to take him on, and so David had to come into camp, deliver Israel, and he also delivered King Saul, the king of Israel. And so David, the house was established. No doubt when Samuel went and anointed David to be the next king of Israel from among his brothers, that established David's house during the time of Saul's reign. So it says in 2 Samuel chapter 3, verse 1, and now there was long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. But David waxed stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul waxed weaker and weaker. In verse 2, and unto David were sons born in Hebron, and his firstborn was Amnon and Ahinoam and the Jezreelites, and his second Chalib of the Abigail, the wife of Nabal, the Carmelite, and the third Absalom, the son of Michal, the daughter of Talmeah, king of Geshur, and the fourth was Adoniah, the son of Haggith, and the fifth is Shephatiah, the son of Abital, and the sixth Etrim by Eglah, David's wife. These were born to David in Hebron. And it came to pass, while there was war between the house of Saul and the house of David, that Abner made himself strong for the house of Saul. And Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah, the daughter of Ahiah. And Ishbosheth said to Abner, wherefore hast thou gone in unto thy father's concubine? And then was Abner very wroth for the words of Ishbosheth, and said, Am I a dog's head, which against Judah do show kindness this day unto the house of Saul, thy father, to his brethren and to his friends, and have not delivered thee into the hand of David, that thou chargest me today with a fault concerning this woman? Verse 9. And so do Elohim unto Abner, and more also, except as Yahweh has sworn unto David, even so I do unto him, to translate the kingdom from the house of Saul, and to set up the throne of David over Israel and over Judah from Dan even unto Beersheba. So this is Abner's commission. Was to translate the kingdom from the house of Saul and to set up the throne of David. And then it said it's Ishbosheth, and he could not answer Abner a word again because he feared him. And Abner sent messengers unto David on his behalf, saying, Whose is the land? Saying also, Make thy league with me, and behold, my hand shall be with thee, to bring about all Israel unto thee. So now here's Abner, was of the house of King Saul, and he is working out a thing here to bring all the 10 tribes that was with King Saul left unto David. And that's so Abner had a very good commission there to translate the kingdom of Saul into the house of David. Now today we have the house of David again on the scene. We have the 144,000 that was in antithetical King Saul's army, the 144,000, and they're waiting to be translated into the kingdom of his dear son, Yahshua, and David, this kingdom of David. So it said, if only 144,000 translated, the question B.T. Hoff asked, what chance for you? He's talking about translating to heaven. But the prophecy shows that they have to be translated into the kingdom of his dear son first, here on earth. And that's the kingdom of David. There we go again, see? All right, so now he goes on to say, this afternoon we shall resume our study of the Zechariah chapter 2, inasmuch, however, as Zechariah 2 is a continuation of the story that begins in the chapter 1, we shall commence our study with it. So it says that Zechariah 1:20-21, and the Yahweh showed me four carpenters. Then said I, what come these to do? And he spake, saying, these are the horns which have scattered Judah, so that no man did lift up his head. But these are come to fray them, to cast out the horns of the Gentiles, which lifted up their horn over the land of Judah to scatter it. Okay. Previously, the prophet saw that these as the four horns, as the powers of scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem throughout the Gentile nation. But as the angel projected the prophetic view unto the time of the end, he saw them as the four carpenters, that is, as the horns they come to fray and to cast out the horns of the Gentiles from the land of the Judah, which is in Jerusalem country. Okay, but as carpenters, they obviously come to build for Judah. Evidently then, when the horns, powers of the Gentiles are cast out of the land and Elohim's people are brought into it, then the times of the Gentiles shall have been fulfilled. So what is that telling us? As soon as Netanyahu and all that bunch of hooligans that's over there running Israel today, as soon as their cup is full and then they'll run out of the land and there won't be no more bartering with the enemy like Netanyahu and all those leaders in Israel are doing today. They've bartered away that land. They gained much of it back in 1967 war. And lo and behold, those traitorous leaders have bartered it all back again to the enemy. And now antithetical King David is going to have to go at the appointed time and retrieve it once again. So we're reading about this. After having been shown the symbolism of the four horns and four carpenters, the prophet's attention was turned to another symbolism. We read about it in the first four verses of chapter 2, Zechariah 2, 1 to 4. He says, I lifted up mine eyes again and looked, and behold, a man with a measuring line in his hand. And then said, for the goest thou? And he said unto me, to measure Jerusalem, to see what is the breadth thereof, and what is the length thereof. And behold, the angel that talked with me went forth, and another angel went out to meet him, and said unto him, run, speak unto this young man, saying, Jerusalem shall be inhabited as towns without walls, for the multitude of the men and cattle therein. So that young man is going to go and measure Jerusalem, get an exact measurement on it. And the thing is, Jerusalem has inhabitants all over the world now here in the end time. So you can't confine the residency of all the members of Jerusalem to that one area where the city was originally established. No, you've got to go across the waters, you've got to go around the world. Because 144,000 have been scattered, they're scattered in all nations in the Adventist churches around the world. Okay, from the fact that the angel suddenly ordered the young man not to measure Jerusalem, it's clearly seen that the man on his own initiative had started to do something that was not in the Elohim's plan. Now, Alan DeLong and Sharon, this fits you. You have gone out on your own initiative, and you thought to go out and do some work for the Adventist Church out of season because their time is up. Nevertheless, you had to learn for yourself, but now you're still in rebellion. After you've learned your lesson, you're still in rebellion. And so I'm telling you that Yahweh's opening up this new life to me because of the decision that I had to make concerning you two, that you have to come completely clean of everything that you have once been told from the start go. And if you can come clean and do everything that you've commanded to do, then repent, then get back here on the campground where you originally made a covenant to do, and do the work that you originally agreed to do for the kingdom, and keep yourself clean from all appearances of evil, then we can move forward. Otherwise, Catherine and I are moving forward very, very well without you all. And we have our Jeff White and our people in Africa. They're moving forward. They're doing great because they're meeting all of the requirements to stay in the boat and to help forward this here message of the Elijahs for their country. We need all the help we can get. I prayed for the help that the people with experience that, like Alan has had for 33 years, I desperately needed his input. I needed his right-hand help. But up to now, he has declined to give it, and so therefore, we don't have any more need of him. We don't have any more need of him or Sharon, either one, unless they want to recapture their first love again. Now, you got to be first. You got to recapture your love of the truth. And when you have a love of the truth, then you willingly and humbly obey the one who has the charge over you. And whenever he tells you that he has a message from heaven for you and that you're to have an opportunity now to fulfill that request, and you say, I will, and then you don't, well, then we don't have no more need for you here at the kingdom's headquarters. So go set up your own kingdom and work out your own salvation with fear and trembling from this point on, because that's why Yahweh told me this last year to put up the fence and to put a gate up there and put a lock on it. For all those that are unclean, they cannot come in after a certain time. Well, if you can maintain this uncleanliness by your disobedience and insubordination, well, then the gates will be locked. And if we need to change the locks on them, we do that too. And so it says, Let's continue reading now. It says, hence, his endeavor to measure the city, number its inhabitants, was a mistaken idea of his own or of the some other, for which he was quickly corrected and definitely told to abandon his trying to measure the city, and that it would be as a town having no walls, no prescribed boundary line, because for the multitude of both men and cattle, it could not therefore be measured or numbered. Since inspiration is looking down unto our time and speaking in our terms, the young man therefore represents latter-day Christian workers, young, not ancient, they're young, who's subject themselves to the reign of the uninspired Bible interpreters that limit the Yeshua. And this is what the Rollis Johnson, he ended up being an uninspired Bible interpreter when he was closing out his ministry there in Kermit 2002. I mean to tell you right now, yeah, unleavened cakes for Passover. He made a tape on it. And he called that birthday cakes that you bake to celebrate, which is a height of idolatry down in Egypt and Babylon, coming out of Babylon. He said birthday cakes is represented by this leavened bread that you bake at the Passover. Can you imagine the deception, the delusion that was sent him? And yet Alan sat here the other day and said, Rollis Johnson published the truth. But I don't understand yours anymore. I don't understand it. I don't think he used the word anymore. He said, I just don't understand it. But Rollis Johnson, I understand his. He published the truth. But you, I don't understand what you're preaching. No, because if I slept through all the sermons like Alan did down at Kermit for 20 years, he slept through all of Rollis Johnson's sermons, that I ever witnessed him sitting out there in that pew of his, he would... Just as soon as Rollis Johnson started preaching, he'd lean back and go to sleep, and now he does the same thing right here at my place. He's been in that now for 11 years at my place. As soon as I start the sermon, he leans back in that easy chair and he goes to sleep. He said, well, I'll listen to the tapes later. And I'm getting more than you think. Okay, let's go ahead. So it says that... imagine that the living saints in the city are to be so few that a man can number them, namely 144,000, not considering that these are only the first fruits, Revelation 14:4 of the great harvest. For the angel's explanation that Jerusalem is to be inhabited by an innumerable multitude of both men and cattle proves that this was news unto the young man. When and how in the stream of time is this young man corrected? The only logical and fair conclusion one can come to is that when the spirit of the prophecy unrolls the scroll, when the Elohim raises an interpreter of the scriptures, namely an typical Elijah, then it is that such a doctrinal correction can be made. And that's why I'm making the correction with Alan DeLong and Sharon at this time, because I represent this person who has been raised up to give the correct interpretation on the prophecies and the scriptures here in this 12th parabolic hour. This brings the close of our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11. Click on our audio archives to hear this message and more. Let us close now with a song. Okay, Dusty Roses, Sand of Feet by the Elijah David. I hope you all don't get bored listening to this song. This is one. My son and I'm a favorite that I've ever written outside of Leading to the Rock. And so it has a wonderful message in it. Hope you enjoy it. I have reason to believe in that man of Galilee. He walked those dusty roads for you and me. Often prostrate and lonely, carried his burden all alone as he journeyed along that road to Calvary. Dusty roads and sandal feet, for the journey was complete from the manger to the cross. through those golden streets, to a place in that land where someday we all shall meet. The author of the story, Dusty Rose Sandalfeet. I have reason to believe in that man of Galilee, for there's nothing in this world he couldn't be. Change the water into wine and cast that demon, heal the blind, and that's why I believe in that man of Galilee. Dusty Rose Sandalfeet, how would you like to meet that man named Joshua? Coming down your street, would you be like Zacchaeus and climb up in a tree? Or would you be like Jonah who wanted to flee? Dusty road for his companion, desert places his abode. Sandal feet were often weary underneath a heavy load. Never complaining as he went along his way, on the way to Mount Calvary and the judgment day. Dusty road, sandal feet, for the journey was complete. From the manger to the cross, to those golden streets, to a place in the land where someday we all shall meet. The author of the story, Dusty Rose Sandalfeet. The author of the story, Dusty Rose Sandalfeet.